This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So we come to this thing called Buddhism, and it may seem kind of strange for us, but it's, you know, I would say at this stage in my practice, it's everything is subject to change, right? Perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing you learn about in this practice is perspective. It always encourages a shifting up in perspective. And my perspective now is that it's all pretty simple. It's not really complicated. A lot of words, oceans of words have emanated from 2,500 years ago. The Buddha spoke a lot. You know, all these words developing into philosophies and stuff like that. And then, you know, vast amount of Zen tradition is, and Buddhism is in the Mahayana line of Buddhism. And a lot of literature, beautiful literature. The contemporary Chan teacher, Guagu, says that, you know, and all these words came into China. And then because the Chinese genius goes, whittles it all away, cuts it down to the bare bones. I like that. That speaks to me. As I said, in the meditation instruction class, I used to work for newspapers, so I'm used to whittling down. What does it, you know, tell me what it means. Let's cut to the chase. And the Buddha very simply said, he talked about the Four Noble Truths, right? There is suffering. There is a cause of suffering. And this cause can be dealt with. That's the third noble truth. The fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path. So when we talk about suffering, you know, I think, you know, there is the existential stuff. You get old. You get sick. You die. It happens to those around us, those we love. Change is always happening. That's existential suffering. Buddha called that the first arrow. And then there's what we add to it, the second arrow. And when I talk to clients, I change it up a little bit. I said, well, there's the initial something. Your wife says she wants to leave you. Something like that, or whatever. And then there's the response. And then I think there's the response, the response, the response as things proliferate. And so I call that, you know, the right now we can talk a little bit about mindfulness. The definition of mindfulness that I like is the conditioned response to experience, being awareness of the conditioned response to experience. And so the Buddha came to that through five things. Form, the five aggregates, form, feelings, perceptions, impulses, consciousness. Five things. That's what that was his focus. And a lot of stuff came out of that. That was it. He was alive to the conditioned response to experience. Okay? So form is the physical form, our physical form. That includes the body and the head. Some of us think that the body is just something that we have that carries the head around. It's a transportation device. It includes the whole ball of wax, as Katagiri Roshi would say. And so then there's feelings. And feelings in Buddhist psychology is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. And that switch is always on. This experience, there's a, you know, how the being is experiencing its experience. Pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. It's always registering that. And then there's perception. How is this experience perceived? And then there's impulses, our habit formations, our habit views, our fixedness, our habit ways of seeing each other, responding to the world. Okay. And then in that, that's where the proliferation really starts. Yeah, I know what he's got to do because this is what he did before and all this. You see how we're beginning to move from beginner's mind already? Then consciousness. And that's for right now, we'll think of consciousness as something that locates this experience and this being as separate from that. Okay. This is happening, this is happening here. This is specific to this in relationship to that. For right now. And so you begin to see that, you know, if you, you know, he looked into that and he goes, well, where's this thing that we call I or me? Okay. What he saw with this is just simply how the human organism functions. And then he saw, you know, and then so I began to see, you know, the dynamics of the second arrow. And in there, you know, coming back to the second noble truth, he saw that this root of the suffering, the root of this dynamic is craving. It's clinging, holding on to it. Holding on to how things should be. Or pushing away what doesn't fit that picture. It's always going on. You can see the setup, right? Pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. So you, oh, pleasant. Oh, okay. I'll have some more ice cream. Sure. I can't have my ice cream tonight. Oh. But you know, it life is full of that, right? And then the neither, the neutral, is what really doesn't shake our cage. And I think that's what we also need to be paying attention to. What aren't we paying attention to? That can be very subtle. That can be a very subtle aversion, I think. The systems, and we'll come back around to the systems aversion to something. And it happens so quick. Bam, bam, bam. It's just always going on. And so, you know, it gets stuff gets reified. We wear ruts, we wear these grooves in it. It's in the neural wiring. And it just becomes so ingrained in us, this idea about who I am, how things should be or shouldn't be. So when we, I'm not a neuroscientist, so that caveat, but I dabble. When we look at feelings, we know now that something more visceral, more elemental happening there. It's the autonomic nervous system, the fight, flight, or freeze response, right? And how that's conditioned. So let's think about that a little bit, how that is conditioned. Let's say from the moment, let's draw a line in the sand and say from the moment of conception on, the conditioning starts in the mother's womb. What's happening in the womb is shaping our brain development, the development of the autonomic nervous system. So that initial response system is being starts the shaping of that, the conditioning of that starting there. Then we're born. And then how the world responds to us, all the environment that we're born into, the shaping of the brain, the developing brain, the autonomic nervous is still going on, and it continues on. In attachment theory, they say, the dynamic with child after birth, the primary caregiver, the mother, attachment patterns form. And, in the first year of life, our relationship patterns are formed. How we respond to another. And the Buddha anticipated all this. It's pretty amazing. But he always kept it there. He said, if somebody wanted to wander off, wanted to get into the esoteric, wanted to, get into the mystical, he would say, okay, is there life after death? Often he didn't respond because it took things away from right here and now. And that's what our practice is, essentially. Right here and now. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I don't search for it right now. But the Ginjo Koan, Dogen, that's where Dogen situates us in the Ginjo Koan. Shohaku Okumura in his book, Realizing Genjo Koan, says he goes to the normal definitions of koan, public case, right? And in China, it was kongong or something like that. Sorry if I butchered that. But it's public case. And then there's another, something else going on there. There is hearing a public case, trying to settle disputes, and then holding everything in equality, each party equal. And then there's another point that Okumura makes. He says, position the position, know your position. Well, and back then, okay, where's my position in society? Right? Where's my position in the family? There's that. But then there is another aspect to that position, and that position is right here. Be away to what's here right now. Pretty simple, huh? What makes it difficult, I think, is I've been dabbling, I've been doing some more dabbling into the bilateral brain. Left brain, left hemisphere, right hemisphere. The left is where the ego is, the ego dynamic is, the language, the sense of time, past, present, and future. It's our manager, all the bells ringing, I better get to. Get to the Zendo. But it also has a very limited perspective. It may like to learn new things, but its perspective is very limited. Does this fit with what I know? Does this fit in with my experience? And how that shapes pleasant, unpleasant, or neither in perception. The right, you know, so Jill Bolte Taylor, you might have heard of her, the neuroanatomist who had stroke. You know, she broke it down into what she calls the four character: left brain emotional, left brain thinking, right brain emotional, right brain thinking. And they got like dual processors. And, you know, I think in my experience, I think, you know, whenever I encounter, you know, it's like, you know, in this practice, you know, you come into this practice and you sort of like you're banging your head against something. And I think that's the ego at work, because it's just making it more difficult than it has to be. I don't understand it. In the intro meditation group, we talk about skeptical doubt. It's one of the hindrances. I'll never be able to do this. This is too hard. This is not for me. All of that chatter comes from the left brain. There's this like an innate resistance to this practice. Although I've seen some people, they just sort of step right into it. But it's our own inner resistance that makes it difficult. All this, these narratives that we develop about something. Well, this seems strange. I remember the first time I walked into a Zendo back in Evanston, Illinois, and it was really weird. I go, boy, this is weird stuff. They had all these bizarre death images on the wall. And then there was this person who walked around with a stick. But Luke, how did Joe say that? Keisaku? I mean, I've always heard it Kiyosaku, but Keisaku, according to Jerome, the stick of compassion. And if you held up your hands, it'd come around and whack you on the shoulders. And but there is this, you know, there is this resistance. There was a cultural resistance. Because when I started out in life, my parents shipped me off to a Baptist church. And so there was all this thing about false idols popping up. See? See the resistance there, you know, condition resistance? But there was something in me that stayed with it. Something resonated, even after a few acts on the shoulder. By the way, and don't take me as a proponent, but the damn thing, when you get whacked on the shoulder done this right, it's like an instant nap. And if you hear it, it's really loud, and it's like an instant nap. So maybe the person next door to you is getting the whack. My system would just go. But I think that resistance comes from the left brain. It's understand. That's just how we operate. So in this practice, you hear about the dual and the non-dual. The dualistic mind, that's what we're talking about here. This adds up to the dualistic mind, the dualistic dynamic. The dual and the non-dual. But we shouldn't forget that the non-dual includes the dual. It includes the whole thing. If it didn't, it wouldn't be non-dual, right? So we come back to that dynamic of craving and aversion, that pushing away. Well, that shouldn't be this. It shouldn't be this way. We have to be very careful, you know, and paying attention to what we're shoving away or what we're clinging to. Right? And for me, it just the sense of self-acceptance. Okay. I have clients who come into me and there's this, oh, they got, you know, oh, I did too, believe me. Oh, all these negative storylines, negative self-narratives, right? When we look into this, we see Well, that's just a conditioned something. These negative self-narratives are just conditioned something. And it was pretty freeing remembering that. I mean, you might experience these conditioned patterns, and it's just right. It can be like you're swept over by a tsunami with emotional stuff. Shame, guilt, blame. Shame, guilt, and blame, by the way, are just tools of manipulation and control. Don't take them too seriously. Because, I don't know about your upbringing, but my parents and that early Baptist church, boy, they were really good at that. Shame, blame, and guilt. So it feels real. It's there, right? But just change up the perspective on them. They're tools of control and manipulation. Very simple. To make you into something that they think you should be or shouldn't be, right? See the conditioning? How far back does it go? So when you look at that, you're looking at the five aggregates here, right? And these things happening, they're energy patterns, simply energy patterns, the body, the organism functioning in response to. I say we're these exquisite antennae. It's not happening actually to us because we're in it. It's just part of the flow. We're in it. We're not separate from. So we begin to say, okay, this is a conditioned something. I'm not really that. I'm not inherently that. We're not inherently that, these things. Right? There's your left brain going, I'll touch on something else too, that I teach in meditation is, so thinking is thinking. It happens. It's part of the organism. The perception, habit, impulses, emotional patterns. That's all there. So it's happening. And knowing that it's one of the things about old age, these things happen.
The thinking is happening.
The thinking is happening. Thank you. It's just happening.
I'm paying attention here.
Yeah. And so being alive and awake to it, it's happening. But we tend to, in our practice, we hear over and over again, just let it go. Just let it go. That to me sounds just too simple. Because it's some, a lot of it's really sticky. The emotional patterns, right? And so how do we, so there's this left brain dynamic going on, the intellectual dynamic. And let's see here. Bodhidharma says, if you use your mind to study reality, you won't understand either your mind or reality. If you study reality without using your mind, you'll understand both. How does that work? I think he's lining up here. When he's talking about mind, he's talking about that left brain ego dynamic, our conceptual dynamic going, which is just assessing and looking at things through its usual habit patterns, right? How do you trust that? So I encourage, pay attention to your body. What does the thinking feel like? What do the emotional patterns feel like? Turn into it. Be with it. What you know, you haven't pushed away anything. You haven't let go of anything. You've turned into the root dynamic of thinking, where that starts in the body. It's a physical thing. You're turning into the energy of it. You're right in it. But you're not in the storyline. You may pop up back into the storyline, but then you just keep coming back to the body. And then pretty soon you'll notice something shifting. And you notice the shift. You know, you can feel the grip of the thinking, the emotional pattern. Feel it, grip it. And then pretty soon it may go. That's simple. That's simple. The conditioned pattern is simply unhooked. That moment, little moment of liberation. That's what the Buddha taught, liberation. That little moment of liberation. And then they sort of accumulate. The more that happens, the body, the being remembers. It's a different kind of remembering. Okay, it's a very visceral type of thing. It begins to soak in. And then you notice that the being starts to turn into it. It just sort of gravitates towards that because that little unhooking feels pretty good. What time are you?
12:30.
Okay. I'll share some things. So for me, you know, meditation is practice is turning into what's here. Huh. This gentle curiosity. Gentle curiosity. What's here? Oh. Like a childlike curiosity. And if the childlike curiosity is not there, then as Dogen, who says, learn the step backward that turns the light in. Learn the step backward that turns the light in. That's what we're talking about. He also says, investigate this. Is that letting go? Be curious about it. The scholar Andrew Olinsky, who used to be the executive director of the Insight Meditation Center in Barre, Mass. Meditation teaches us the value of every moment's unique experience. You have never taken in this particular lungful of air before, and you will never do so again. This particular step, which is with its lifting, moving, and placing phases, is absolutely special. Beginner's mind, he's talking about here. When you choose to attend to it carefully with your awareness. There's something I came across, someone I came across, his name is Tahania, and he's from Myanmar. I was a monk from Myanmar. I get a daily thing from Tahania. You might check him out. Let me read some samples for you. Emotions don't need to go away. The objective is to know what the emotions feel like, what thoughts you are having when there are emotions, and to understand the nature of emotions. Once a strong emotion has subsided, you will be able to look at the feelings, thoughts, and body sensations involved. The better you understand how these all interrelate, the more skillfully you will be able to handle any kind of emotion. You're awake, right? Let's talk about being awake. Right attitude is accepting, observing, and learning from your experience. Just as it is. If this wisdom is present, then everything else becomes possible. Meditation is not trying to experience something you have read or heard about. It is watching and waiting patiently with awareness and understanding. And a student asks him, what do I do when I'm confronted by strong feelings of worry, anxiety, or fear? Tahania says, observe how such emotions make you feel. Do they make you feel hot, tense, tight, etc.? Also pay attention to the thoughts you're having. How do these thoughts and the way you feel affect each other? Yeah. Right in there, right? Right in there. Don't get lost in stories or get carried away by feelings. Look at how the mind is working. You will learn how your thoughts influence your feelings and how your feelings influence your thoughts. You will recognize certain harmful patterns, and this will enable the mind to let go. So in this process, there is a natural letting go. Okay. I like to point out that, you know, we're so enamored of our thinking, but you know, 80-some% of our thinking is recycled something. You know, okay. I'm here again. What's the point? And so there's this natural disillusion with our own process after a while, if we're really awake to it. And we go, oh, okay. No, I don't think so. Thank you. We say to the operating self, no, I don't think so. It's just sort of more natural. Okay. Thank you. Any questions? I have trouble with soft voices, so if you could speak up, or I might have to ask you to repeat. Any questions, any thoughts? Chuck, my echo.
So you're saying when you let go, it becomes easier, that people struggle with that in the beginning, but as you go along and you let go of your thoughts, that it becomes easier?
Well, no, I'm saying turn into the thinking. I'm saying, you know, we spend time with it. No, but there will be times, in my experience, where it's just so intense, I just say, I got to stop. This has got to stop. I tell them, you know, I just sort of, let's change it up here. There is that, you know, because you're interrupting. The important thing is to interrupt a pattern. So, you know, when we think about simply letting go, you know, that's interrupting a pattern. That's interrupting, you know, a thought process, an emotional process. And the more that happens, that's good. Okay. But I'm very careful with it because the letting go becomes very quickly, I think, it's a very slippery thing into repressing. And so we've lost an opportunity. Okay. Oh, this is here. This, you know, oh, the, you know, we may be in a, you know, I describe it as spin cycles about something. We might be going down a rabbit hole and, or we may just be, you know, monkey mind type of thing. But it's an opportunity to investigate, to look into. We don't have to say, oh, that's because my mother said this, or anything like that. You know, we don't have to go there. It's just what's here right now to investigate. What does this thinking, what do these emotions feel like? You know, so, you know, Tahania says, you know, notice how the feelings or the emotions affect the thinking and vice versa, you know. So Jill Bolte Taylor says, you know, that if, you know, when there's an emotion, there's been a chemical reaction in the body. That's what we're feeling. And if left to its own devices, it'll move on through in 90 seconds or less. But what keeps it around is the thinking. Okay. And so we can investigate that. And then, you know, but, you know, when I say investigate, for me, it's really, how does, what does this feel like? And I'm writing with the waves of, you know, that of the experience in the body that's happening in the body. And I'm writing there with it. And then pretty soon, you know, it may pop up some, but I keep coming back. And pretty soon it just goes like this. Because, you know, the thinking is no longer propagating the emotion. Okay. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So we spoke about letting go. Is it true that our self, like, or our ego is just in some sort of an accumulation and attachment? And so when the process of letting go is happening, that ego or self is becoming smaller. Would that be accurate?
Mm-hmm. Let me back up just another. I'll come back to where you are with it. But coming back to my distrust of letting go, it's usually an ego decision. Of letting go.
Letting go is an ego decision.
Well, in our normal thing way of letting go, I need to let go of this. That's an ego. But where you are now, could you repeat that question just for me again?
I just wanted to confirm, like, what is going on when we are letting go of something. And so to understand that, I was hypothesizing that is the actual ego, or what ego is some kind of an accumulation of the past or what we want from the future. And when the letting go is happening, then that ego is becoming smaller. It's kind of like shaving itself off in some way.
It's not doing anything to itself. It's the process. It's shaping.
Yes.
Our relationship to the ego is shifting. Right? The relationship with it is shifting. And so there's something, you know, I think that there's this back and forth dynamic happens. So that, you know, there's something happening in this awareness or in the right brain dynamic, in the bigger mind, big mind perspective. And when that opens up, and then there's this echo thing, I think, that goes back and forth, that's influencing the ego. And the ego sort of loses its grip. Its grip loosens because it's beginning to take in a new perspective. That does happen. Okay. And so I say that the grip of the ego loosens. Right? And we're in healthier relationship to it. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
I wonder if there could be a more detailed, concrete definition of ego or examples, such as if I want hot water, I want warm places to live, I want food. Are those basic physical needs also part of the ego? Because we need to work for that. That's something we cling to.
Well, you're talking about, you know, basic human existence and needs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is not, you know, so we're not talking about getting rid of the ego. We're not talking about shutting it down. We're just, you know, we're talking about seeing more clearly, discerning more clearly the dynamics of the ego and what trips us up. Okay. So, you know, I had to get up this morning. And I told Giroux and Luke, I said, you know, I had a good sleep last night, but I really could have slept till noon. And so, but there was something in there. I said, well, no, you got some things to do this morning. That's an ego dynamic. So I got the reason why I'm sitting here and I'm not up in my bed. And it's so that we discern the dynamics in what's tripping us up and what's not. So it's not a hard and fast something. Does that make sense for you?
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you all for being here today. I'll say this, you know, being with all those beginners mind this morning is a real treat. I hope you all come back.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.